Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
How are we feeling this evening?
Oh, just peachy. Looking forward to a little badminton with Dave tomorrow, taking a movie or two.
Sarcasm doesn't help you, Mr. Peters. Neither does challenging Dave.
Fred and Nickel.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 31, Full Metal Betsy. Uh-huh. I live in a world of shit. And now here are your hosts.
Sarah Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi,
hello.
Joker.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. We will get to this penultimate episode of season four.
Penultimate?
You weren't listening in the last episode when we said. Episode 32 is a two-parter.
I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, I
see you there.
Before we get into this episode, though, we want to tell you what's happening on our Patreon. Again with this episode 83. It's dropping February 11th. Let's watch Marsha Cross in The King of Queens. Sarah, I feel this will be less controversial than our last outing.
I'm feeling good about the direction. I think we're trending upward for sure.
Yes. That is on Peacock. We will link in the show notes where you can watch that. If you are a Peacock subscriber, if you subscribed for the Olympics, hey, you can get this too. And you can get that episode plus all of our back episodes if you join us at patreon.com/againwithus. All of those are available to you at any level of support, plus also ad-free episodes, access to the Discord stuff, joy, do it.
Yes, do it. It's fun.
Let's start with our C-plot. Matt's illness cramps Joe's dating style. How dare he? So Joe's leaving in the morning when she crosses paths with Matt, returning from a run, sweaty as hell. He thought he would feel better if he could exercise, but he thinks he has the flu or something. Joe feels
his gray makeup-itis. Oh, no!
Yeah, seriously. Joe feels his forehead and says he's burning up. Matt, the medical student, insists that he just needs rest. And that night, Dr. O'Malley's walking Joe out to a date, but she wants to check on Matt first. He looks even more like shit than before, but is in the middle of saying he's fine when he passes out mid-sentence and falls into Dr. O'Malley's arms. He will call 911. They need to get Matt to the hospital right away! And the next morning in said hospital, Dr. O'Malley's in Matt's room directing his care while Joe stands at Matt's bedside. He's stabilized, but he still has a high fever. Does he remember any incident from the past few days? This is so preposterous. If Matt, a medical student, did not get himself tested for everything after the needle stick, he should change careers immediately. Like,
yeah.
Plus,
aren't they supposed to report that?
Yes.
Like when disposing of sharps, if it broke the... whatever.
Yeah.
Sigh.
But at least he does not dick around much longer before sheepishly admitting what happened. And while part of me wants to be appalled at Dr. O'Malley for yelling at Matt about his incompetence instead of being compassionate about an unfortunate accident, he's not wrong. Matt is not behaving responsibly.
Yeah. And but also, did we have to do it this way? Like, we had enough reasons to hate Dr. Dominic. I don't really think we needed another one, but fine.
So... while Joe chases after him down the hall, trying to get him to calm down, he tells her again correctly that they need to find this guy, Jared. So that night, Dominic brings flowers to apologize to Joe, who's been ignoring his calls because she thought he was being shitty to Matt. And he gets defensive, saying the cops are looking for Jared and Matt's doing better. And Joe wants to know if he apologized, but he still doesn't think he's anything to apologize for. Maybe he'll even get Matt kicked out of medical school once he's better, in fact. And so Joe grabs the flowers and stomps off, saying she's going to give them to Matt. And in Matt's hospital room the next day, the doctor tells Matt the cops found Jerry. I was not sure the first time if I misheard him, but he definitely has consistently called him that throughout the episode, even though he's credited in the last one as Jared. But anyway.
Phyllis.
They were shooting 5 episodes at the time. What can you do? Anyway.
He does look more like a Jared, given that he's not, you know, 54 years old, but whatever.
Yeah. Upshot is he died. But first, they were able to confirm that he had spinal meningitis. So Matt probably does too, but they'll have to do a spinal tap. And Matt chokes that it's his fault Jared died. But now, because he wants to fuck Joe, Dr. O'Malley gently assures Matt that they've caught it in enough time that Matt will probably be okay. And it's not Matt's fault that Jerry or Jared died. And when Matt gets well, he'll make a great doctor. And that night, Dominic returns to Joe's door with just a single rose this time. He wanted her to know Matt's going to be okay and she'd go see him. He knows that Joe's left him some messages and he didn't want her to think he was avoiding her. He just needed time to think things through. She doesn't need to apologize. It's on him. He thought he was protecting his patients like Matt from the pain and confusion of illnesses, but he was trying to protect himself. And as he spent more time with her, he's realized that's not necessary. And she jokes that the speech and flower was supposed to get him into her apartment, and he hoped so. She claims he didn't need a bribe. Again, Joe, you can do better. My God, I can't believe this is her off-ramp.
Please do better.
Ooh. But that's it for them.
Yeah.
Onward to our B plot. Jane works her angles to plan a murder. The morning after Allison put his drunk ass to bed, Jake is reporting to Billy that she told him she only wants to be Billy's friend, which I'm surprised Jake remembers. But Billy thinks that's code for Allison wanting him to fuck off. Jake disagrees. He notes that Billy's been a jerk since Brooke's death. And that was also like 2 months ago. So maybe pump the brakes on dating, dude. But Jake thinks Billy should understand Allison being wary. So what does Allison want Billy to do? Be her friend, like she said. But did Jake get the impression she thinks that she might still have a thing for Billy? Jake is noncommittal, but thinks Allison still needs Billy as a friend. God, infuriating. Then a very perky Jane wanders into a clothing boutique and asks the saleswoman, played by Brooke Langton, about a sporting goods store that's supposed to be on the block. Brooke, whose character we will soon learn is named Samantha Riley, says they moved out and she and Jane chit-chat about the gym that's moving into the location. Jane's chic outfit, which it's fine, and that Jane was the one who made it. Samantha would love to get some of Jane's designs in the store, though she adds that it's too late. The owners are getting divorced and closing the store and Samantha's about to lose her job. Jane gives Samantha her card and says maybe Samantha could work in the store as long as she wants, which, like, Jane, you have not earned this kind of confidence, but Samantha doesn't know that and looks intrigued. Cut to the medical office, slammed with patients for the first time ever, which we're supposed to think is due to Peter's absence. Jane appears to have a quick word with Michael. She's starting a new venture and she needs his financial backing. Didn't she and Richard just sell $1 million worth of her designs to a giant department store chain? Mm. I mean, I know she didn't get all of that, but she got some.
Yeah. Well, and if she's plotting to kill the dude, spoiler, wouldn't all of the money in your partnership go to you to spend how you wanted?
One would think.
business.
Anyway, the practice is hanging by a thread, so Michael can't help her. Clip two.
Look, after everything you've done, I figure you owe me. Please, Michael, this is important to me.
I owe you? Your sister owes you. Why don't you go to her if you can find her? She's been socking away her 10%. Hell, you could blackmail her.
What are you talking about?
Oh, come on, like you haven't figured it out yet. The pills. She's the one who spiked your drink and nearly paralyzed you for life.
Oh, boy.
I mean...
Go ahead.
I just love, like, I would love to have heard the conversation in the writer's room where it's like, it's not possible to do this organically, so we're just going to have Mancini fucking word barf it out again.
Yeah.
Like, the number of things that Calabro just has to, like, heave forward with stuff like this. And, like, he's doing a great job. Nothing against Calabro, but man.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if I'm Michael, if I'm suggesting that Jane should blackmail Sydney? Because where do you think that money would come from if she did? She's just going to write a check off the practice's account. Duh.
Mm-hmm. Again.
Right. Which, like, she's been doing this all season. Is this ever going to come back to bite her? Seems like no.
Yeah.
Anyway. While Jane is absorbing this revelation about her paralysis from approximately 800 episodes ago, yet somehow still this season, Sydney shows up, having just seen off Bobby's casket at the airport. And then Jane comes out of Michael's office, darkly glaring at Sydney, but passing her without a word. And when she's gone, Sydney asks what her problem is. And Michael's like, oh, I told her. Sydney's face is hilarious. And sometime later, Allison comes into Shooters looking hot in a red sheath dress and telling Jake she's meeting Billy before dinner. Jake comments that Billy really seems to be making an effort to mend fences, but the significant look, capital S, capital L, that they share over this is interrupted when Jake sees Billy walk in behind her and they leave, and Jake is left to nurse his sudden unrequited love alone. And then over dinner, Allison tells Billy she realized she wasn't as career-driven as she thought and needs to find satisfaction on a deeper level. And he's so checked out that she calls him on it, and he pretends to know what she was talking about before admitting that he should have picked somewhere else for dinner where he wouldn't see so many of his work associates. And then pours himself some more champagne and changes the subject back to himself in clip three.
But I did have a reason, as we were saying before. What your life could be. Just think of it, you know, we're both back in D&D and I'm not a jerk anymore. We're having fun, we're doing great work, and we're having that kind of relationship, you know, the equal relationship that we always had trouble having. Forget about Amanda, I mean, I'll run it, interfere, make sure she doesn't bother you. I mean, you would still be there if I had, like, screwed everything up. See?
I knew this was a mistake.
Don't throw away. Hey, you know what? I care about you. You know, I've been going to all kinds of trouble, quizzing Jake on how you are now, and I respect that.
Jake? You talked to Jake? I'm
trying to figure out what makes you happy.
You used to know without asking.
Allison, come back here.
I mean, the rest of his performance in the scene is dreadful. And this is also bad, but it's so funny. Allison, come back here. Like, she's a puppy.
So funny. The face that he makes in the visual aids, it's so like the scowl is really remarkable. But
and yet the mouth is open.
Oh, of course.
It always is. It is hilarable. It is the platonic ideal of hilarable.
Yeah.
So bad, so good.
And yet,
bless you, Andrew Hsu.
Considering how much time they had to potentially lay track for this, like, we don't get any information about, like, why is he getting so drunk? What is the purpose of him being, like, you know, quasi-networking with other advertising phonies at the restaurant, which, like, that goes nowhere.
Like, why does he want her back at D&D? She has shown no inclination to leave Shooters. Like, the whole thing is just like, okay, something got cut.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, cut to Jane's place where Sydney's showing up to try to shrug off that whole thing where she paralyzed Jane, I guess. Clip four.
Michael told me he told you. So I thought we should talk.
It's probably a good idea.
I've been going over and over what happened, and when it all boils down to it, the whole pill thing was an accident. See, I was putting them in my drink, and then... Wow, Jane. Okay, this was a mistake.
Sid, I was just cleaning it.
I'm sure you were. I think maybe we should talk when you're feeling a little bit more rational. You know, I'm not really comfortable around instruments of death. I won't tell anybody about the weapon, you know? It'll be our little secret.
Yeah, we'll talk later.
Okay. Another time. Bye-bye.
The sound
soundtrack is so serious. And then this is just being played for like Mickey Dolenz was subtler
yes.
with the physical comedy. And but for some reason, maybe just because it's almost the end of the season and I'm like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
Yes. Mickey Dolenz is a great reference. I was thinking like this could be a Simpsons take for her like backing mm-hmm. out and then you hear her footsteps running away. Yeah. It's very good.
The only thing missing was like a splash of her like cutting through the pool
through
to
the
get
pool.
Away because it was shorter.
Yeah. Yes. Leaving a Sydney-shaped hole in the door. Yeah.
Yes.
So the next morning, Allison goes to Jake's to yell at him to stay out of her business, especially her love life. He tries to defend himself, but she says if he's her friend, he will keep her secrets and never set her up on another date. But this display of passion apparently just makes Jake love her more, judging by his dumb face. And that night, Sydney's on her way up the stairs to her place when Jane grabs her by her halter tie and physically yanks her back. Another great physical comedy moment in this plot mm-hmm. line.
Yeah, that's the first time they've actually seemed like sisters who grew up together
yes.
in a while.
Yeah, it's true. So inside her place, Jane cuts short Sydney's babbled apologies to get down to business. Clip 5.
Now, you've seen that I own a gun. Now, I assure you, I have no intentions of harming you. Understand?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, now I don't know if you've heard from this incestuous grapevine around here, but I was raped by Richard in New York.
What? Oh my God.
Don't worry, I'm fine because I have a plan. And you're part of it.
Jane, that sounds like a matter for the police. I mean, but whatever happens, I'll be there for you, you know, to support you in any way.
I said to listen. Now here's the deal, we're sisters and I need you. Fortunately for me, I have you over a barrel for you to make the pills. So, you will be both my alibi and my co-conspirator as I set things right.
What exactly do you mean?
I mean that you are going to help me kill Richard.
So.
Seems fair. Oh, and
yeah.
Then we're even. Sure.
But. This show is so bonkers at this point in its life cycle. This is not the final act out of the episode. Like,
no,
there's something even fucking crazier to come.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the end of this plot line for now. Let's close things up with our A plot. It's a hospital jailbreak.
Is it?
Is it indeed? We open here with the detective looming over Amanda's desk as she recaps Peter's plotline while proclaiming his innocence. Michael enters, and once the detective has vaguely threatened Amanda and left, he tells Amanda that Kimberly just has left him and gone to Hawaii. And Amanda yells at him for letting Kimberly go when she must know where Peter is. He claims she doesn't, and then screams at Amanda that he lost the love of his life because Peter pushed her over the edge or kidnapped her or ran away with her or something. Amanda says Michael's hysteria is not helping, but neither are the cops. So if Michael wants to find out what's happening with Kimberly, he's going to have to help Amanda find Peter. Speaking of whom... At Willow Ridge, Betsy tells everyone in the day room that Dr. Tucker will be back in a few days, and she wanted to give a little farewell speech before his return. She has loved being interim director, and the staff is so great. As for the patients, if they ever intend to return to society, they need to accept that their treatment and medication are for their own good, and if they resist, her treatment will only get more severe. They can just ask Mr. Peters, and Peter mumbles that Kimberly is not well. Betsy tuts that it's sad what's happening with him. She knows everyone likes Mr. Peters. She even sees Nurse Benson looking at him all cow-eyed. But Peter's a kidnapper, a torturer, and an abuser, which, yes. She needs to make sure he's locked up and never hurts anyone again. And when the meeting adjourns and Nurse Benson comes over to wheel Peter somewhere, he quietly implores her to help him. And that night... He lies in bed, repeating his name to himself and saying he's going to get out of there. And Nurse Benson enters with a tray and advises Peter not to try to challenge Dave. He says the injections are killing him, although the medicine is helping. And then he says this, clip 6.
If you could help me orally.
Okay. No. He quickly says he means, could he take the meds in pill form? But we all know what they were doing there. I'm not
yes,
that mad about it.
No, me neither.
Anyway, Nurse Benson has to check with Kimberly. He says Kimberly's a mean old snake, not look like the good and compassionate and beautiful Nurse Benson herself, but she injects him. He begs again for pills. When she's strapped him back down, he asks for just one little kiss on the cheek, but he's already sliding away from her as she decides to lean down, and then he turns his head in time for her to land on his mouth, and she gets flustered. But when he asks, she agrees to call him Peter. Cut to Michael's office, where Amanda storms in yelling at him for not being reachable. She got flight info and proved there hasn't been a Kimberly Shaw on any flights to Hawaii, and claims she also hasn't found any hotel reservations in her name, but like, there are 1 billion hotels in Hawaii. She could not possibly have called them all.
Yeah.
But never mind. Kimberly lied to Michael. Something's going on. And in Amanda's office the next day, Michael's frustrated at finding nothing actionable in any of Kimberly's office papers, while Amanda remains determined to keep looking. Michael is dubious about Peter's diagnosis of Kimberly's multiple personality disorder, not because Peter is a surgeon, but because he's a wanted murderer, which, like, all right. And fair. As Michael rants on, Amanda ignores him, calling a bank and posing as Kimberly to ask about her recent ATM withdrawals. Which, if they really find her this way, she deserves to get caught. But fortunately, Michael remembers Kimberly's PIN, which is shrink. And all of the recent withdrawals are in Merton, which is near Sacramento. Road trip! Speaking of Willowbridge, Nurse Benson enters with pills for Peter. He asks her to unstrap him. She complies pretty readily, by the way. And he pulls himself up with a hand on her shoulder as he thanks her. She exposits her sad fucking sob story. She's been a nurse there her whole career. She's never wanted more for herself than the work, but it doesn't make her happy anymore. And after kissing her, Peter begs her to take him away so he can make her happy. Wink, wink. She can take him to her place just for one night and return him before bed check. She thinks it's too dangerous. He thinks dangerous is good. She'll think about it and then gives him his pills and restrains him again. And when she's gone, we see he cheeked his pills. Can you even believe it?
Oh, Nurse Benson, you got to check under the tongue, if you know what I mean. And I think you do.
Yes, help him orally. In Merton the next day, Amanda and Michael show Kimberly's photo to a coffee shop server who recognize her. When they claim they're colleagues from LA who want to surprise her for her birthday, the server tells them which motel she's staying in, and they just rush out without ordering anything, which is an unnecessary but very funny detail.
Yeah.
So then they stake out the motel, spotting Kimberly instantly because this criminal genius is driving around in her very memorable convertible with the top down.
Mm-hmm.
Girl.
A redhead, no
come
less.
Come on.
Sure. Come on.
So our super sleuths disagree on tactics. Michael wants to go confront her because he's pretty sure she's on her way to fucking Peter. But Amanda notes that this joint is not exactly the kind of place you have an affair in and wants to call the cops. Michael counters that Peter will definitely get arrested and Kimberly has been in enough trouble. So in he goes to the motel and the desk clerk is, hey, it's that Rance Howard, as in Ron and Clint's dad. He died in 2017. We miss him. Michael shows him Peter's photo, pretending he's trying to find him because of a patient emergency. And Rance doesn't know Peter, but Kimberly's staying there and said not to put it through any calls except from Willowbridge, the local mental hospital. Thanks, Rance. That was helpful. So then it's nighttime. Nurse Benson's back in Peter's room. She's undoing his restraints, but it has to look like he's still secure if anyone looks in. And she gives him the master key and tells him to wait an hour and then sneak out. And she will wait for him by the gate. Meanwhile, Michael and Amanda are in the car bickering about whose fault it is that they can't find Willowbridge because they can't just use their GPS because it's the past. And as Peter's creeping through the hall, Louis, the poem guy, spots him and begs Peter to take him with him. And he makes so much noise that Peter does let him out just so he'll shut up. And Louis wants to bring Marco, too. He's Louis's only friend. Cut to the gate where Nurse Benson's not happy to see Peter coming out with his whole fucking entourage, Calypso 7.
What in God's name are these two doing with you?
Nurse, this isn't a love affair. This is a break. Now I need your car. I'm getting out of here. Will you give me your keys? Please give me the keys.
No! No, you're not! Help!
No, don't hurt her!
Don't. Get to the car,
doing?
Will you?
What are you doing?
I'm Dr. Peter Burns from Los Angeles. What'd you do that for?
I trusted you.
I'm sorry, okay?
You deceived me!
I'm sorry, okay? Just give me your car, please. I gotta get back to Los Angeles.
I trusted you! You have to pay for this! I swear to God, you're gonna pay for this!
So he gets dragged back in. They all do. But then,
Excuse me?
This is a private institution. I'm afraid you're going to have to leave.
Of course, but we're looking for someone. I'm a physician. Do you have a Dr. Peter Burns on staff or anywhere around here? He's about 6 foot, sandy hair, smug.
This is a recent photo of him. It's very important that we see him. It's a family emergency. No, this man is not here. Now you're going to have to leave, I insist. We're locking up for the night.
Sorry, I had to leave in the gate squeak. Very gothic.
Coming from inside the house.
So the photo that Amanda shows is her with Peter, and as soon as Nurse Benson sees that he's already all bait up, then he's dead to her suddenly. Nice going, Peter. Speaking of whom, Betsy's there as Peter's old friend Dave slams him up against a window, so Peter gets an eyeful of Michael and Amanda giving up and walking off at the gate while Kimberly shoots him up with more drugs. And the next day, she's gathered everyone in the day room to lecture them about the attempted jailbreak, with Peter nodding off in the seat of shame in front of her. Clip 8.
Nurse Benson, would you like to explain what's going to happen to Mr. Peters tonight?
Dr. Shaw will give him a temporal lobotomy.
And Nurse Benson will gladly assist because of the way he deceived and betrayed her. Yes, Louis.
I have to go pee.
Now, Louis, you won't try and run away again, will you?
No, no, I promise.
All right, go on.
Kimberly, if you do this, you'll never recover.
Don't worry about me, Mr. Peters. You're the one with the adventure ahead of you. You are about to discover a clean and simple way of living. Living without thinking. Won't that be fun?
It sounds okay.
I don't know.
Right now,
let's ask Rosemary Kennedy, whose name I used as a verb in my notes. May she rest.
Yeah. On the other hand, a life without thoughts, like, so there are days. Mm-hmm. You know? There are days. Michael's calling in for messages to an unbothered Sydney, filing her nails with her red patent leather sandals up when she gets another call. It's Louie. He's not peeing. He's telling Sydney where Peter is and that he's about to have a brain operation.
In fairness, he could also be peeing at the same time. We don't know.
You're right.
He seems like an enterprising guy.
He does. This all sounds like nonsense to Sydney, who hangs up on Louie just as an orderly comes to drag him back. But when she clicks back to Michael to tell him about the prank call she thinks she just got, the details make a lot more sense to him. But I guess he decided to have dinner first, because it's after dark again when Michael and Amanda return to the gates of Willowbridge, Michael yelling impotently for someone to let them in. Amanda still wants to call the cops, but Michael doesn't think their story would get them very far. And as they try to find a back way in, Nurse Benson and Betsy are prepping Peter for his lobotomy. Betsy can't wait to see the manipulative light go out in his eyes. And outside, Amanda finds an improbably long metal pipe in a dumpster, as you do behind a mental hospital.
Yeah, which also seems to take forever because apparently nobody in the edit bay heard of cross-cutting. Like, yeah. This is just really laborious, the whole thing.
It takes a long time for Michael to pry the bars off a window, which even more improbably works, and they enter. And inside, Betsy and Nurse Benson mask up. We all know now that Betsy's does not fit her right. You can see in the visual aids. She needs to tighten that bottom. Goes nice and snug on your chin there, Betsy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she fires up her drill, bringing it close to his temple, and that is the end of the episode. What a ride. Holy shit.
Yep.
Let's close things up with our episode MVP. Jane again?
Yeah, I guess.
She gets some funny moments. I mean, the halter top grab is one of my faves.
Yeah. It's good. I'll allow it.
Yeah. She should not be trying to think about starting another business right now, but we'll set that aside.
No.
That failure can happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Least valuable player. Billy?
Spoiled for choice, really, but...
Yeah.
I mean, Nurse Benson?
Yeah. She knows shit's fucked up. She didn't have to fully narc on him.
Yeah, I mean, and she could have just, you know, helped him orally and herself before ratting him out. I'm just saying.
Yep.
Oh, well.
I'm going to give a dishonorable mention to Billy just because. Shut up, Billy.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair. Get back here. Next time on Again With This, fucking finally! It's the finale. Oh, you want a plot recap? I don't really think you do. But in the largest nutshell that I could find at Costco, Kimberly returns to a coma, Allison wants to bone Jake, Matt's on speed, Peter's not actually Peter, and from the grave, Richard looks to give the ratings a hand. You will see. You will also see the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. You can also find a link there to buy our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 or swoon feverishly into the arms of our Patreon page. There's tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content there, including our monthly recaps of the 90210 MG podcast for subscribers at the $5 level and up. And you'll find all of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Nurse Wretched, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is RP Mock Murphy, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Squeef Bromden, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Squeef Bromden took me a fucking minute, and I'm just going to take the lap. Woo! And we did it.
Very good.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.